What is up, everybody? We're back with another Deciphering Dynasty episode 3. We made it 3 episodes. We did not get canceled after the first 2. That's always a good sign. So me and Leo Basiga are back, and we're going to be talking about startups, and we're going to be talking about roster construction. So one thing we want to really do is, as we're diving into Dynasty, you know, going over kind of how to rebuild or trades and all that kind of stuff is great. We're in Dynasty season now because there's a bunch of degenerates out there starting Dynasty leagues right now. And I see it out there. I see all the draft boards and all of that. So how do you start your Dynasty? And this is more of like a theory. This is all theory we're talking about here of how we have a roster construction. Zigging and zagging, balancing depth, living in comfort zones. Like, we're going to be doing all that. And then Leo's going to explain his damn matrix, because I've read the article and the matrix is there for me. So understanding kind of how to dive into his matrix. And when you're drafting, I think it's an incredible article. It's one of the best articles I've ever read. And we're just going to be diving into that towards the end of, like, hey, you know, what does this matrix look like when we're starting up our Dynasty league? So let's just start. Let's get into it. So when we talk about roster construction, when we're in a startup, we join the league. You know, what are we looking at when we first kind of dive into these things, Leo?
So I think the most important thing that you can really set the table with is having a plan. You need to have a blueprint when you walk into that draft, whether it's a live draft, whether it's an online draft. And I'll give you an example. So even though it's not Dynasty related, those folks that are out there that listen that have been fortunate enough to get into one of the Fishbowl drafts, Fishbowl 12. So I've gone to the last 2 have been live in Boston. Fishbowl 12, we didn't decide our draft positions until we walked into the draft. No one knew, right? So we just did a random card draw, and that 1 through 12, and that's where you drafted. And this past season, we knew 4 weeks in advance, 5 weeks in advance, whatever it was, what our draft slot was going to be. And that could not have been a more defining example of draft prep, because knowing your slot and having a plan and being able to build that blueprint made a huge difference over walking in and having to be prepared for 12 different draft slots. And that just, to me, was a example, a microcosm of having that blueprint, being prepared, having an idea, still being fluid and flexible, but having that blueprint when you walk into that draft and having an idea of what you're going to do is critical.
Having an idea, and you have to be well-rounded too. Like, so I've been lucky enough to be in Scott Fish the last 3 years, and each draft's different. And when you dive into those, just like any Dynasty draft, you know, you come in thinking you have a plan, and then, you know, that guy that loves running back starts taking all your running backs, or that guy wide receivers and or the rookie picks, and they go early. So having that and be flexible is the most important thing. And like you said, like, I've been in those types of situations too. In 2 of them, I didn't know it. And I made the playoffs and I made the semifinals in one league where I was like in with Scott Fishbowl, where I came in with, I thought it was a bad selection, but I just kind of stuck to my strategy. I stuck to my board and I kind of went through it and said, you know what, these are the guys I'm going to go there. So understanding that is important. Like, and a lot of guys start a league, they do a randomizer, and then boom, they start. That's really how it goes. It's very quick because people love to do the startups and do the draft part of it. And every year it's different. You have to keep going with how it builds. So we've been talking about that in our last couple episodes of how the Dynasty landscape shift. Running backs have gone out of the way. Like, to be, for example, we've done a mock before. And I was in a Dynasty startup for charity. So I usually just do it in charity leagues now. And in that charity, we had 4 running backs go in the first 5 rounds. That is it in a Dynasty. And that is crazy to me, because that's not how it used to be. So you have to know that stuff coming in, like going in. And we're going to talk about things that I do too as we get into it. So yeah, absolutely. Being flexible, understanding where that goes. So when you get into a league, there's some important things that you got to talk about, and you got to know how you're going to do that. So I know we want to start with like roster construction, but also like starting requirements and scoring, right?
Yeah. So in order to build that blueprint, the best foundational piece is to understand where your points are going to come from. So how is the scoring in your league set up? Is there a penalty for turnovers, for interceptions? I mean, right. So if you're in a super flex league that you get hit pretty, you get penalized pretty significantly for interceptions, that's going to change your player pool, who you're going to prioritize as you draft. If you have a tight end premium scoring system, that puts other strategies on the table. You know, you can do bully tight end where you, you know, prioritize tight end and really bang that position frequently. So there's a lot, the scoring and the flexibility of starting positions. What does that look like? What does your depth look like from your roster? Do you only have a, you know, 15, 16 man roster, or do you have a 32 man roster? What does that look like? That changes what that blueprint, what that strategy is going to look like. So all of those, and they can be weighted, right? As you get more and more experience building a startup team, going through that draft, you can understand what you want to weight a little more heavily, but they all are components into what that blueprint is going to look like.
Yeah. And it's important. I know like people roll their eyes when we say know the scoring. I cannot tell you how many people get into the league and don't know scoring and they don't look at the fine print until afterwards. And they're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, why are these, you know, why are these guys going? Why are there so many tight ends going off the board? Or why are the QBs kind of flying off there? Like knowing where that comes from, but also like your roster spots and just your flex spots, because a lot of leagues, it's two running backs, the rest are flex. Well, then that devalues the running back position, in my opinion, because I'm just like, hey, I'll just take some flyers at running back later. And if I can stack it, because I love putting wide receivers in my flex anyway, I'll stack wide receivers. And that's kind of where I'll go. But then you also have to know, most of your league mates probably are going to do the same thing. So then when do you zag? Like if you're looking there and you see like if your league mates kind of have that same value there. Also, 10-team leagues, you want elite players. So I'm going to try to move up and get as many elite players as I possibly can. Depth is overrated in those 10-team leagues. So, okay, I have a different kind of mindset there. And the other thing I was going to talk about too, when you're thinking of like starting requirements and all that, you know, if it is a 12-team standard Superflex PPR, just like 12-team Superflex, just a normal standard league, not tight end premium, to me, like I want as many picks as I can in the top 12 rounds. 120 picks is really where you see a lot of that tier starts going. That's why in our mocks on the channel, I don't go past 12 rounds. I stick it at 12 because I want as many elite players as I can in that group. And then you're going to find subgroups. So, you know, this year I've been finding the round 7 through 9 running back heavy. Like running back heavy, that's where a lot of guys are grabbing their running back 1 and 2s in that range. So knowing that, okay, tight ends, really after the first 5, you're looking at rounds 9 through 12. There's some value there. So knowing kind of where to get your picks, understanding how many spots you have, if it's 28 as opposed to 32, okay, if it's 28, then I need to go get some elite talent. If I don't have as many picks, or if you're going to trade picks, know that instead of trading back and collecting maybe dynasty picks after round 12, start collecting some rookie picks next year. Like try to maybe collect those, because you don't want to grab like round 16, 17 picks. To my opinion, it's kind of like fool's gold. Okay, I'd rather get a third next year because you can use that for trades or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think those are all fantastic points. You know, for me personally, I've always been someone that when you're able to utilize the flex position for more than just running backs, I've always wanted to focus on wide receiver just because I've always been one more comfortable evaluating that position. And I've always just felt that that value just held itself. And it also afforded me the ability to trade back, because I'm a huge advocate of getting out of the first round if possible and doing exactly what you just described, building as many premium picks as I can in between rounds 3 and 10, and just trying to bang that as often as I possibly can, because the variance, the differential, we talk about variance a lot. It's really not that great. You know, you can easily build a juggernaut from rounds, you know, 3 through 8 that you could, you know, if you had 2 first-round picks. So to me, the idea is always, if wide receivers are flexible and you can, you know, bombard your flex lineup with wide receivers, that's my focal point, unless all the other 11 owners or 9 owners, depending on the size of the league, have the same, you know, draft idea. And then we'll talk about zigging and zagging, you know, and going against the grain with some things. But yeah, wide receivers if I can, and then trade down, but not too far down. And once we hit that certain cliff, then it's trade into the next year. And I think you framed it up exactly. If you could outline the perfect execution for a startup, that would be it.
Yeah. And for those of you that are going into drafts, just to kind of give you context for Leo's at right now in the trades and the mocks that I've seen, or even like some of the dynasty leagues I've seen with the rookies included or rookie picks to give you value wise, seventh round is the trade to next year area. In my opinion, if you're in that seventh round, eighth round right now, you're talking about like Josh Jacobs is kind of in that range. Kamara, Pollard, Kelsey still, Isaiah Pacheco, Ingram, Spears, those type of guys, I would much rather trade into the first of next year's class, even though considered down. Don't do that either. I keep hearing, and I'm someone that does a lot of the Debbie stuff because I love it. You know, I don't have as much time as I used to, but the 25 class, all I keep hearing that is down doesn't matter because people are going to fall in love with prospects no matter what. So you're going to be able to use those first round picks. I know that it's not going to be as vaulted as like the 23 class was because everybody talked about it, but those picks are always going to hold value. So you're going to definitely have, and I don't care what anybody says right now, DeAndre Swift's going in the eighth round. DeAndre Swift is not going to have the value a 25 first does going into the next offseason. It never will happen. So if you can move some of those picks and get a first, that's still a viable strategy as you kind of build out your roster and understand that. So like, that's where I'd have it. Seventh round right now, just based on all the research and all the stuff that I've done, is generally somewhere, even late sixth, if you're comfortable kind of moving. I would still try to collect an asset back. I wouldn't move a six straight up for a first. I would move a six for a first and then try to get back like maybe a 10. Somewhere trying to stay in that 10 to 12 range if you can, depending on who is there. I do want to point this out, though. So I did talk about, you know, I put in the notes, you know, it is okay to do bully strategies though. So, you know, grabbing bully tied in, like if it's tied in premium 1.5 or higher, I don't mind grabbing tight ends as they come to me. You know, bully running back is another controversial strategy. I have a friend, kind of a friend. He's kind of a friend of me. His name is John Bauer. He's a, you know, he does dynasty theory and all that. And in all his startups, you know, he focuses, he'll just go quarterbacks. If the quarterbacks fall to him, he does that. And I've seen him take six or seven quarterbacks in the first 10 rounds. It can be done if you trade a lot. That is one of those the caveats to quarterbacks. And if you're not willing, if you're willing to wait a little bit, how do you, you talked about a little bit of wide receivers, but how do you feel like the bully tied in, bully quarterback? Do you have any, you know, say in that? Do you feel like you can do that? How do you feel there?
Yeah. So I think a lot of it depends on, especially if you know the group that you're drafting with, you know, a lot of the listeners probably play in more than one league, probably familiar with some of the folks that they've already played, yeah, you know, in leagues with. So if you're in an active league, we talked about that in the first two episodes. If you're in an active league, that makes the bully strategy practical because you know that you're going to be able to, you know, configure your roster the way you want it. You know, if you're going to go and draft six, seven quarterbacks, again, if you're in a league that isn't active, that doesn't trade, you're stuck with those six or seven quarterbacks and you can only start two. So you're going to be dependent on an injury, you know, and generating some activity in that league. So again, to me, the trading value matters. But I do think it presents a viable option when you have to go against the grain, right? If all of a sudden tight ends are falling, and you've got an opportunity to bang two at a turn and just get two top notch and utilize the variance from that position early in draft strategy, then I'm good with that. You know, you've got to build the differences into your roster with whatever presents itself. So I think that it's great when you get a group of managers that all have different philosophies, all have different tendencies, different strategies, because that really builds the perfect model for you to be able to execute what you want. Where things get really difficult is when you're drafting with 11 other managers that all value the same positions you do, the same players you do. That's when it gets really, you know, it gets, you get bogged down because you're, you know, you have your strategy and now you have to adjust and you have to adapt. And there's, could be, maybe it's not your comfort zone, could be, but the bottom line is if everybody's drafting the way you initially wanted to, there's going to be value other places and you have to identify that.
Yeah. All right. Well, you kind of segued into it. It's like you do this for a living, living in your comfort zone. So like, let's talk about that. So, you know, we put in the notes, like living in your comfort zone when you draft. I definitely want to like touch base with this. Positions you evaluate well is always important and then playing to your strengths. So like living when you're in a draft, living in your comfort zone, what do we mean by that?
Yeah, so there's certain positions that some managers just are more comfortable with, whether that's running back, wide receiver. Sometimes it's whether you're comfortable with taking risks, or you're very risk averse? What does that look like? Are you somebody that really likes to build a roster with volume? You want players that see a lot of touches, maybe over the small sample size that just has a higher ceiling. There are certain areas that we, you know, in the first two episodes, we talked about evaluating yourself as a manager. And there are certain areas where you're going to be more comfortable selecting, building that roster out. So I wasn't a huge super flex player while I was, you know, heavily involved. When I had 30 plus leagues and 30 plus dynasty leagues, I only had a smattering of super flex leagues. Because of that, I was far more comfortable in a super flex startup hitting quarterback early, because I did not want to walk out of there with one viable quarterback and that's it. Whereas when you build that experience of drafting super flex and you start to get more drafts under your belt, whether they're mocks or actual drafts, you start to know the folks you're playing with. I see a lot of very talented super flex dynasty players that don't hit hit quarterback early. They wait. They get one and then they just build the rest of their roster out and they're comfortable grabbing one in the later rounds. That wasn't me. So again, blueprint set up on where was I comfortable, and so that I would walk out of there feeling like I had built a solid roster and I could fix whatever I needed to after the fact. So I think folks gravitate to what they're comfortable with, whether it's evaluation, whether it's risk, whether it's volume, any different category, and folks gravitate to that. And I think you play to your strengths as long as you're still able to adjust.
Yeah, I love this topic because like you said, there's guys out there who draft one quarterback. That's me. I am totally like, and again, I want to always have context in the show, but I also want to give you like advice right now. Like when I'm going through drafts right now, like if you're sitting 101 to like 107, you can get a QB1 in that range. Like, depending on how you feel of like, you know, Herbert, Burrow, Stroud's in there, Mahomes, Jackson, Hurts, Allen, like Anthony Richardson, depending where you're at there. After that, like, you know, depends on where those quarterbacks go. Like, it depends on how much you trust Jared Goff to be your QB2 and taking him with a premium top 3-round pick, like in that second and third round. If you're not comfortable with that, yeah, you might be like, you know what? I will draft Allen, Hurts, Jackson, Stroud, none of those guys, and then I'll wait and I'll get Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Stafford, those type of guys to fill out my QB2. Now, it's a risk. It's inherently a risk, but there's also guys that drafted Joe Burrow last year and, you know, and then he got injured and you're sitting there without your first. And then Watson was going in the second and third round range. So like there is definitely risk involved, but it's also just like, hey, I believe I can build around this. I've done it in the past. I'm okay with doing it. And I'm okay there, like in terms of where that build is at.
So I think this ties all together with what we've talked about previously. So when I say I wasn't comfortable doing that with the one quarterback, and I wanted to leave the draft with two early, so I was comfortable. Mm-hmm. I would take notes and I would write down, okay, here's how the startup went. We talked about that, you know, taking notes, seeing how your strategy, how you're able to execute it. What if maybe you had, did the strategy work, just the player choices weren't correct? So I took notes on the fact that I took too early, and this is why I took too early. And what would it have looked like if I had waited and went back and revisited that draft and looked and said, okay, if I had waited, you know, in this round, I could have gotten a very viable quarterback. And because I was able to go back and look at it and see how it played out and then check other drafts, whether they're actual startups or they're mock startups, and look and say, okay, well, what if I had executed the one quarterback strategy in this draft, what would it have looked like? And because I took the time to dig in and see, was the outcome what I really wanted? What could it have been if I had tried a different strategy? That gave me the confidence to do exactly what you did. I didn't start that way, but because I was able to watch and assess and evaluate and say, okay, I would have had a much better team if I had done exactly what you had said. And I was able to see that on paper. And so that built the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to try that. I'm going to execute that plan. And then as I, you know, as I had more super flex experience, that's exactly what I did. I waited, but not how I started.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that idea of just improving, like, you know, it's like anything in life. Like, and I'm an educator at heart, so like everybody here is a soapbox for me, but like, you're never going to start, you're not going to ever be the smartest person in the room. You're always going to make mistakes. I'm in a new role in my job right now where I'm an admin now, and I've made mistakes, but I'm learning. Like the first 2 months, I was like, holy crap, what do I do to myself? I cannot believe I'm doing this. Managing dynasty teams was the same way. If you're new to it, like dumping in a dynasty league, like you're so used to that redraft mindset. Like, and even a couple years ago, drafting Saquon in the first round, Zeke was going in the first round. Like, and then it's like, oh, okay, now I got to adapt. That didn't work out. Why? So understanding the why, understanding why that, you know, didn't go, and learning from it each year is important. It's also important why you don't jump in 75 leagues the first year. Like, you got to take it slow and go there. And I do want to talk about too, like when we're talking about comfort zone, you have to shift as the draft plays out too, though. So like the key is to be flexible, like with your approach, but stick principles, like have your principles. We know, like, hey, we know where our comfort zone is. We're okay with that, but it is okay to be flexible. And I remember this from a real life draft I had last year. I was going in with a productive struggle mindset. I'm going to struggle that first year and build out wide receivers, get in a position where I get Caleb or Marvin or Drake or one of these guys. But then the draft played out and I was sitting there and I was like, no, I'm going to have to build now. I'm going to have to go for it because I just didn't, everybody else had that same strategy. Mm-hmm. And I had like the eighth or ninth pick. And I was sitting there like, everybody kind of has this strategy here. You know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go and I'm going to build out. I ended up getting second in the league this year. So I lost the championship, unfortunately, but that played out in a way that I did not think it was going to go. But then when you turn it on, you're like, nope, I'm going now. There's got to be a shift. And the key is to be flexible, but I still was principled. I was still able to grab, like, you know, I was able to build, hey, I'm going to win now, but I'm still grabbing pieces. I can move. I can trade. I was still getting good values from rookies and later rounds that I liked. So it wasn't that I was just going old, 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 old. I was still being flexible in my build, but knowing that I was still going to have a 2-year window. I'm going to try to go win it, but getting me pieces that I could still trade out of if I had to.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you do. And I know when I first went into Dynasty, you're right. The transition for me was very difficult because I came from a running back heavy mentality. And I remember the very first Dynasty that I did, I think I took Travis Henry in the second round because I was so focused on making sure that I built up that running back group early on. And so you do, you learn from that. And as you build that experience out, you get comfortable making those changes. And I think that's why peeling back the layers like we're doing here is important. I think mocking is important when you don't have a lot of dynasty experience. I think getting in a bunch of the mocks that all these different sites run and building that experience, because there is nothing that helps you more than just repetition. You know, drafting is the same as it's a memory muscle, and you get comfortable with players, with values. You start to see where they go regularly and you start to build that repetition, and it helps you be able to adjust on the fly, because that's really what happens. You're right. You keep your core principles. And then as you see momentum for certain positions, as you see age for certain positions, as you start to read the room that you're drafting against, you start to see the gaps where now all of a sudden things are available. And again, you were right. You compensate. So if you go veteran heavy, you start to lean into that a little bit more. Well, how do you balance that palette out? What do you do? Well, now you start to look, okay, well, maybe I don't need this pick right here. Let me trade it for a rookie draft 2 years out. Let me start to add that youth looking, projecting out, because that was my original blueprint. I've kind of deviated a little bit. Well, how do I bring it back to center? And that's, you know, that's how you do it.
Yeah. And that's how you, and then again, the next topic is like balance that depth versus the starting lineup. And like, what do you do when you're into it? Right. Like, so like, I always get this question as we go through, like, I'm on the clock. Do I take best player available, or do I take it? You know, do I need a running back? Do I take a running back here? I mean, I get that question a ton. I get a lot of questions in my DMs about like just best player available. Do we do that always? I know where I'm at. So I know where I do. I tend to, what the advice I give, and everything is contextual based on league. So that's the other thing. Like, it's really, it's very dependent on the stuff we just talked about. Is a position premium? Is, you know, where your floor? Are you risk averse? Are you have all those things? So everything is in a context of definitely what we talked about here. But what do we do with best player available or best value? What do you do with that while you're looking at like how you build your team?
Always best player available. Always. Because that's what trades are for, right? That's what negotiating through the offseason is all about. I'm one of those. I like to take advantage of managers who like to have a perfect lineup in March or April or May. Your lineup doesn't need to be set until September. So up until you have to set that first lineup, it's always best player available. And then even once you start setting lineups, it's still best player available. It's just, what do I need to round out my starting lineup?
Yeah.
But the only caveat I would say to that is, again, if the league is designed for a particular starting lineup or a particular scoring format, for me, the only time I would consider position is super flex. As I'm getting deeper, and if I only have one quarterback and there's still some viable options on the board, but there may be a tier higher at another position, then I might bump the overall worth of that position up a little higher. But that's the only exception for me, really. Otherwise, it's best player.
Yeah, I love how you talk about the tiers, though, because there is a little bit tier-based in there, like with the premium. Because I'm a best player available. I put that in the note. I said, best player available in startup, trade for need after. It doesn't matter after that. You just kind of go and you figure it out. And also, like, when you're doing best player available in startup, if you do the tier based on, like, the premium or wherever it's at, that is going to be more trade bait for you. Because if the guys punted the tight end position and it's tight end premium, if you draft, like, you know, what's a mid tight end, as the kids would say right now? Let me think. Like,
Evan Ingram, maybe?
Evan Ingram's a good one. You know, Ferguson or like those guys, and Dalton Schultz, even if he lands on a team that's exciting and he gets that bump too. Like, if you're sitting there and you're like, hey, if you draft those guys, those mid-tier kind of tight ends, but it is tight end premium and a guy is punting and he was looking for those guys, it's kind of all of the above. Bully tight end, you're grabbing that. Best player available, trade piece. Okay, now as we get closer to the draft the draft, yes, but also when you get into the August and we get into the preseason stuff, that's when you start wheeling and dealing too. That's when you start filling out your roster and saying, okay, I do know I have some weaknesses here. I have some areas here. That's why you go best play available, because at any point, like if you don't take best play available, if you're filling needs in February or March, that value is going to dip out. Slowly, it's gonna erode. It's like the California's coastline out here. Every freaking rainstorm we have, every earthquake, it just slowly starts eroding, and that's not good, because if you have a depreciating asset in February and in August, man, that thing starts looking pretty bad, and that just it limits what you can do. It limits your flexibility, and you don't want to ever leave your flexibility out the door. Like, for example, I do a show with Jeff Bell, unfortunately, every week, right? And me and Jeff, we have the rivalry. But he is strict. He hates old players. That guy will not take a player over 25 unless it has to be like, and that's just how he trades too. So like, that is just his ability of like, he's going to take best player available. And his number one thing, and he talks about it, he's probably right, unfortunately, is that he does not want any asset that's going to depreciate at all. Like, he's like, hey, I'm going to churn. And he churns, he trades a lot. And if you're going to do that, then yeah, that's the ability you have by taking best player available. And he's aggressive taking best player available. If he thinks Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best player on the board at 112, he will take him. He's not worried about the rookie thing. He's not worried about that. So that is a way to kind of understand like why we do best player available.
Yeah. I do think that being comfortable in your evaluations matters, though, in that particular sense, because I think a lot of times we're driven by consensus value. We've talked about that in previous shows as well. I think that it even affects us to a degree. Like, do I really want to go out on that limb that far? Even though I believe in that player, do I really want, when I've got this tier of already, they've already proven they can produce in this player, I think they can, so being comfortable in your evaluations gives you the ability to go after your own particular best player available instead of consensus best player available.
Yeah. And that's totally like, that's one of those things where you have to be comfortable with it. And I don't like like when I first started, you know, I used other sites' rankings, and I'm not going to say other sites are bad or good or whatever, but they don't make you second guess yourself if you're not like, if you're sitting there and you're like, and there's guys, I still second guess myself with guys. And because I try to be as laser focused as I can, I do this as a pretty big side part of my life. And I still can see someone tweet about someone or someone say something, and it gets in your head and you're like, did I not see something? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And that you have to be comfortable with where you are. You have to stick to your guns, because there's always, and you're going to miss. You're definitely going to miss, but you hope that those misses aren't as many. But be careful with that, because I do know, like, just stick with your guns when you're in those startups and you go in there. And that's the number one thing I always tell people that ask me questions. I always lean as, where are you leaning right now? I always lead with that. Like, where are you leaning? Give me your reason why. And then I give them the answer back. I said, well, if you're leaning here, this is what I feel like is the upside play, blah, 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 blah. But I always tell them, go with your gut. Go with what first your intuition got there. Don't change your answer after you wrote it down. And if that's still the way you feel, that's how I would go. And that's just generally good advice, I think.
Yeah, I think the key to that is writing down why you made that decision. You know, mm-hmm. we talked about that in episode 2. Why did you make that decision? Because, you know, it just makes it easier to go back and evaluate whether successful strategy, wrong player, or just a bad strategy, bad eval in general. Yeah. And being able to differentiate between the two matters.
Yeah, I know. I've had a few of those. Bad eval, yeah. Bad player, bad, yeah. Like, what the hell is that thing? Zach Evans comes to mind. Yeah. I love Zach Evans, but that man just still hurt my soul. All right, let's go. Last part of this, last couple parts of this is, you know, zigging while others zag. I think this is an incredibly important subtopic of startups. So gaining the advantage on the fringe is kind of what you talked about. Yep. So when we zig and zag, what are we doing here? How do you zig and how are you zagging? What are you looking for?
I'm watching a couple things. I'm watching for positional runs. Did they happen already? Does it look like this is a prime situation, especially if you're drafting on a turn, anticipating mm-hmm. what is that draft? How is that going to play out? So what I like to do, getting kind of really into the weeds here, is, watch where I'm at. You kind of have a tier already set up for who should go in the next 8 to 10 picks. You're picking at a turn. You can kind of slot in 10 players. What's going to be available when I pick again? What's going to be available next round? And you can start to watch and decide positional run upcoming. Do I need to get in front of it? Am I going to break it when it comes around? So you just want to see where the momentum is in the draft as far as what's happened, what's coming up. And then the other thing I watch for from a zigzag perspective is, what does roster construction look like? What the other managers in this league, what have they done already? There could be a positional run that you anticipate, say for tight end, because people have waited on tight end. But then you look and the three picks in front of you are the three managers that have tight ends already. So you can kind of judge, all right, so positional run possibly upcoming, but the three picks in front of me already have tight ends. So that means, you know, what am I going to do when my pick comes up? Now I can start to plan for it and move in a different direction maybe than what you think is going to, you know, happen in the next few picks.
100%. You have to know for sure the three people in front of you, the three people behind you, what their teams are starting to look like. Because you got to know, kind of generally speaking, where they're at. But I was also going to say in here, it really depends on where you find your draft selection. So if you're at the back end of a draft where it's just snake and it's not, you know, it's not three round reversal or anything like that, you might have to reach and start a run. Like, you might have to do that. Like, and that is okay. Like, if you're looking at it like, hey, it's going to be 24 picks before I come, I need to get this guy because you know what? I might be overdrafting at ADP, but it actually wouldn't be, because I would be taking him in 5-6 picks anyway. So I'm willing to take a overdraft bump at 6. Or if I'm at the beginning of a draft and I'm sitting there and, like, you know, you got Josh Allen as your QB1 in Superflex, and then you're looking at it like, man, I see these positions. Wide receivers are going off the board, but I believe this rookie, Malik Nabers out of LSU, or one of these guys could possibly be a wide receiver top 12 guy at the end of this year, next year. willing to grab them? Like, are you willing to take them and do those things? And the one thing I will say is wide receivers have become rookie wide receivers, are expensive as hell. It used to be where you could get Ja'Marr Chase in the fifth round as a rookie wide receiver. You're not doing that anymore. Now Marvin Harrison Jr. is going pick 12 overall. So you have to understand too that, you know, value wise of those guys are changing. So like, if you're going to start a run, you know, you might be like, you know, and I always see this, this is the thing that always makes me laugh when I'm in leagues. They're like, oh, that's early based on this. It's like, this isn't based on anything. This is your draft. This is how our discussions look. And this is how like your draft, your league mates are drafting. So there's no like based on ADP. There is no based on this site says this, like when you're in there, you got to go and just understand, you got to start a zag. You got to go do it. Because especially if you're in those back ends, if you're in the middle, you can dictate a little bit better. Like you can kind of see, okay, this is where the run is coming. Hey, I anticipate the run. I am always like, I will say this, I'm very fluid, but I'm also very like, I'm okay starting a run. I don't mind starting a run. Like I'd rather start a run a little early than be on the back end of a run where I'm like, I don't want to take this guy because this is going to be gross. I should have picked so-and-so a little earlier than I needed to. And that's how I feel about zigging and zagging.
Yeah, the one thing I'll add to that, because we, you know, we're talking about serpentine startups. A lot of people are doing auctions now, and so one piece of advice to that is when you talk about zigging and zagging in an auction startup, you want to make sure that you don't get sucked in, right? Like you, unless you have a particular player that you are fully on board with dumping, you know, 60% of your budget on, then you don't worry about it. But, you know, at least with a serpentine draft, you are able to kind of plot out, you know, you're able to plan a little better. In an auction draft, you just want to make sure that, that you do have kind of a hard line and you do zag when everybody else is zigging and dropping money on particular players, that you kind of have a hard stop that isn't quite as, it isn't quite as fluid. Like for me, when I did the auctions, I had a tendency to, when I had that player, I knew I was going outside of my comfort zone. And you know, I had to learn the hard way that, you know, yeah, I got that player, but then all my other plans got totally, you know, they were totally down the drain because, you know, I got caught in that moment. So that's the only thing I would suggest. And I know, you know, we haven't spent a ton of time talking about auctions, and that's probably something, you know, we'll look at maybe down the road. But that is the one caveat that I would add to zigging and zagging when you're dropping, you know, your budget on a particular player.
Oh man. If we talk about auctions, I'm going to get a special guest to host for me, cause I am not an auction guy. This guy knows that, Aaron. I've been in some leagues. I think we've been in leagues. I don't know if it's the other Aaron, but yeah, auction's terrible, but this is a good point. I want to bring this up from Aaron. You as a drafter contributed to that ADP. Exactly. Like an ADP in February is a lot different than May. Like you, the reach in February is the, oh my God, the value in May. Like that is just generally speaking how you kind of, you know, if you reach, it's not necessarily a reach ever, right? Depending on where it's at. Now there's times that it happens, but usually it's not at that point. Like I will say this just as an aside, it really is not part of this. The most fun startup drafts I ever have is you get rid of ADP. You sort it by alphabetical order. Those are awesome because ADP kind of gives people crutches because they can just kind of dive in and they don't have to build a board. Like if you really want to have some fun, if you're in a startup on Sleeper, you're able to sort it by alphabetical order and there's no ADP. And you get to see how people would really build their teams. Even analysts, I think, struggle with that because, you know, they're so used to having ADP there. They're so used to the board. They're used to underdog. If you go straight alphabetical order, ooh, boy, it is funny how, like, that kind of changes a little bit because you really got to build out a big board. You got to actually set a queue and understand kind of where your values are. That is the best way to do a startup, in my opinion, because it kind of gets rid of that crutch. And now you're having to build it from scratch. And that's where you see a lot of fun values. Have you ever done that? Have you ever done one with the alphabetical order?
Only once, and it was a local redraft that we did. And that was challenging. It's definitely a crutch. It's definitely there was a lot of you know, damn, I didn't know he was still available. You know, there was a lot of head slapping and folks cussing and mumbling under their breath. But yeah, that sounds like a great way to do things. And
it's fun.
I'd like to probably do a dynasty league that way just to see how things play out. The other thing I'll say is that mock ADP is not the same as startup ADP. I mean,
no.
People, you know, and be cognizant of that because people take a lot of, I say that about the fishbowl mocks a lot too. Strategies that work in a mock don't necessarily, you know, the confidence of a unusual blueprint, it's easy to pull off in a mock, but when you have money on the line, it's completely different.
When you have money, it changes everything. And people get like, it depends, especially when the money's there. So yeah, 100%. I think for mocks for me, because I know mocks get a little bit of a bad rap sometimes. What I like about mocks is they can show me pockets. Mm-hmm. And I can look at pockets and I'm like, yep. Okay, so generally speaking, that's why when we do the mocks on the channel, and I know I've been slacking, I'm sorry, my life's been crazy. But when we do the mocks on the YouTube channel, I try to identify pockets for people saying, hey, this is like round 7, 8, 9. This is where those pockets are going. And that's generally where I did it. But even then I'm like, okay, this pocket's at 7, 8, 9. If money's on the line, this pocket's probably at 5, 6, 7. Like it depends on like, oh, this player's probably going to go a little earlier based on that, but 100%. All right. So before we get to the draft ends part, do we want to talk about anything else? I know we put reading the draft as it unfolds. We've kind of talked about that, but is there anything else that you want to kind of get into there?
Yeah. The only thing to note I wrote down was when we were talking about trading out to a future rookie draft. If, you know, as you started to get down and you were talking about round 6, 7, potentially, and that next year's draft doesn't look that strong, but I agree 100%. I think in a startup, rookie pick valuation is always, you're always trading into the next class because it's always going to have value. I do think, though, where weak and strong classes come into play is when you're rebuilding. I think it is so much better to look at windfall draft classes. And if it's 2 years out and your league allows for trading 2 years out, invest in that class. You know, from a rebuilding perspective, from a startup perspective, you are 100% right. Every draft class is going to gain value as soon as the year ends and trading into the next year's class, regardless of strength of class, is great advice.
Yeah. And find that manager that's going for it. Like find that manager, you could tell they're by their build is going for like a win now build. Cause their picks just became a lot cheaper. Like they're like, oh yeah, I'll give up my 26 first. I'm going to win this thing in 2 years and probably bold, but we won't get into that. But like, hey, I'm going to try to win this thing. And then you go. So just know, like, if you see that build and this guy really is going for it, and let's say that Aaron Jones or like any of those guys in that range, they've slipped a little bit, or one of these veteran wide receivers is kind of, Mike Evans is sitting there still in the 9th round. And it's like, oh, you want Mike Evans? He'll win now piece. Give me this plus this, or give me that rookie pick in 26 that you don't care about that pick. You don't need that pick. Yep. And then you can find a wide receiver in the 12th to 15th round that possibly could at least produce some type of numbers where you're looking at points per game for Mike Evans. Plus you get that first and you're like, yeah, I'll take that first. And if I need to go trade for another guy. So
yeah,
and I think there's value there.
I love going 2 years out when you're dealing with a manager that's in win now, because win now generally means you're probably looking the following year, you're looking at 110, 111, 112, but 2 years out, you could be looking at 15, 16. So I always think when you see that win now manager, I always try to go make that trade for 2 year out rookie pick, because I think that's where the value is.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Draft's over. Draft ends, and I think you made a huge point in this. I just want people to understand about it. So most people, draft ends, the league dies. Like the league's just dead for a little while, and then it'll pick up, you know, whenever rookie drafts come around or whatever the case may be. Maybe if you had that, or some trades come around, a training camp or landing spots happen. But what should you be doing as soon as your draft ends?
You start to evaluate every roster in your league. You start to look at where the gaps are in your opponent's rosters and their depth charts, where you can gain some value. I think you also evaluate your own roster, because you may have gone in thinking that you were going to compete in year one, and you realize now, looking at your roster based on the other 11 in your league or 9 in your league, depending on league size, you realize, you know what? It really didn't turn out the way I thought it would. So now let me sell some assets now because I'm not going to compete, or I am going to compete. So let me be aggressive. This is your window. Now we talk about, not worrying about your perfect starting lineup, but now you're worried about overall talent on your roster. So you're looking to bring in as many premium players as you can. And so by judging this particular manager got three tight ends and is really weak at wide receiver. That's my strength. I don't have a valuable starting tight end. So let me try to construct that deal. This is your window. So, and I think because there is a lull, if you're able to be aggressive coming out of the draft, that gives you volume, you know, that gives you a louder voice because it is kind of slow. You're not trading right up before a rookie draft where everybody's looking to make moves and, you know, the chat is on fire. So take advantage of the lull and build those premium players into your roster.
We have a question I want to make sure I get to, and you're 100% right. But it says, what's the definition of pocket? Usually I do it by rounds. So like I will look at like rounds 3, 7 through 9 or 6 through 5, just a pocket of players, like a bunch of running backs coming together, a bunch of wide receivers coming together. I identify like QB2s coming together. That's kind of generally thinking what I mean by pockets there. But like what Leo's talking about when we talk about, yeah, I think understanding that. And then like we've talked about it. I've done a bunch of stuff. DynastyDaddy.com does this. So I, my charity league that I just did, and we're looking at kind of how our league sets, you can go straight into it and you can already see. So you can kind of look, and I wanted to show everybody just, you know, we're just going off the cuff here because I thought, you know, Leo was so smart when he was talking about it. So like what you can do here, let me get this off the screen, is like this is a team that I just drafted. So I know it's kind of small to see for you older folks that, you know, it's a little tougher there. But when you look here, like you can just plug it in. It's completely free. And this will just show you kind of like where your teams are at. So, for example, the team that I drafted right here, it says it's the contender. You know, quarterbacks, I got dinged a little bit because I have Trevor Lawrence and Kirk Cousins. It does not like a guy coming off an Achilles that old. But, you know, when you're looking at wide receivers, I built through my wide receivers. The rookie picks are show you kind of the rookie picks that you have there. And then it shows you kind of where you're ranked at based on there. And then now I can go through here. And I'm like, okay. And this league just got done like literally yesterday, I think it was. And then this guy, Young MCs, you know, he's considered a fraud for whatever that means. Sorry, Young MCs, if you're watching. And, you know, it shows kind of where his team is at and kind of maybe where his value is. So he has some pretty good quarterbacks, you know, Bryce or Anthony Richardson or whatever. But maybe Bryce is one of those targets I look at. Maybe I can get younger a little bit with Bryce if he's going to kind of go towards that competitive build or whatever he's going to do, that maybe 1 year out build. So to his point, there's definitely tools like this. I know there's a bunch of other sites that have this. I just like the free stuff because I don't want you to pay. I'm cheap too, so I'm not trying to pay there. But I identifying kind of where you do it, and I don't do this enough. I think as we kind of got into it, we talked about it. Like I don't do it enough where I'm analyzing the league right after I'm done. But that is 100% a good point. And understanding kind of like, where can that be? You know, who punts? Where's those first at? Who do I like? Who has those like weird vulnerable assets I might be able to go get that they just kind of drafted there? And in no like limits too, because some dynasty leagues let you draft over roster limits. See who's over the roster limits. Maybe extract some value there too.
Yeah, a lot of the dynasty leagues that I had played in would allow you to expand your roster to say 35 players off season, but then you had to cut down to, you know, 28 once you got to August. So there's definitely some maneuverability there, especially, you know, if you're looking at building up your top tier players, doing a 3-for-1, if you're over the roster, combining, you know, two or three players to try to get that one upgrade. But yeah, whatever you're able to do to improve your roster and take advantage of the lull, it all just comes down to looking at where the gaps are and on the other managers in your leagues and building a deal that looks beneficial to both squads.
All right. So that's how we got to talk about startup. I like that. I like how I can kind of bear like the balance and the depth, the zigging. And again, if you have some questions about this, you could drop it. I know Sean asked a question about kind of retooling once you're already in there. We're going to get to that. I'll make sure we'll get to that, Sean, at the end today. But if you have some questions about this, the startups and ideas and all that stuff, just drop them and we'll get to them. I do want to get into this, go, because I'm excited to talk about it. And this is our guy Leo's kind of, you know, his Eisenhower matrix. And as a history guy, I love the Eisenhower reference because that's my guy. So Eisenhower matrix in terms of, you know, what you're looking at in terms of draft prep. So before you kind of jump into it, but I'll let the man take it away because I'm interested to see, like, I read the article that you wrote and I think it's good, but like, let's, you know, start with how you want to start it. I don't know if you want to start in what quadrant you want to start it at, but just kind of explain to us your process here.
Yeah. So basically this is a tool that I've used in, I was an ops manager for many years, and this was a tool that we used on a pretty regular basis for project planning, for implementing a new process. And it basically just breaks down variables in an ambiguous situation. We started this show with you need to have a blueprint. And this is basically how I build a blueprint out. Mm-hmm. And each quadrant kind of represents importance to avoidance. And you can plug in whatever you want. And in this particular diagram, I had just thrown in some certain things. So in the upper left, you've got your necessities. This is what I go into a draft wanting to make sure, you know, my firm blueprint that I really want to leave with, certain players that I've targeted that I want to just have on this roster, specific position in a round that, you know, do I want to start a run? Do I want to make sure I leave the first two rounds with a particular position or super flex? I want to have a quarterback in the first two rounds. How is the format and the scoring impacting my particular decisions from a necessity standpoint? And then what am I doing that could potentially be run resistant when mm-hmm. we talk about, you know, seven players in a row coming off for a certain position? I like to build my roster so I'm not run dependent, so I don't get sucked in. So how do I do that? Then we go to the upper right hand side where it's kind of like these are the decisions that I'm making on the fly, the adjustment fluidity aspect of what I'm doing. Be flexible. What's the risk reward? What do the coaching staffs look like that maybe have impacted a particular player, maybe rising, maybe falling as I'm doing this mm-hmm. startup, right? We've just had a bunch of assistant coaches change teams in the last 3 weeks. What has that done to my big board? How's that moving? Closing vulnerabilities in the draft as I'm moving through it. Okay. And then, you know, am I run susceptible at a certain position because I've built neglecting a certain position? And so basically, again, what I'm doing is I'm building, this is almost like post-it notes all over my laptop to kind mm-hmm. of, but it's all in one place to kind of keep me grounded as I'm going through it. Bottom left-hand corner, distractions. How much risk can I digest on this? Is the hype driving this particular player to be a higher value than I think he is? Am I guessing at a particular outcome when I really shouldn't, when it should be based in facts and data, not emotion? Smells like settling. We talked about taking that player where you're just kind of like, oh, I got to take that player. Right. And again, positional runs working their way. Is it a distraction? Am I going to get roped in when I don't need to? And then the bottom right hand corner is just pure avoidance. Certain players I just don't want to deal with. Certain situations I don't want to deal with. Certain depth charts or coaching situations. Right. Arthur Smith. Do I even want to go down that road again? Smith.
Right? No.
So and then what's contaminated by association? So, again, it can be whatever you want in any one of these quadrants. This was just a blueprint that I came up with as I went into a draft to help me kind of stay grounded. Flexibility is the key, but having a shell, right? Just a foundation of what I'm looking to do. And that having this up as I'm drafting, especially on an online draft where there might be 6 hours or 8 hours in between mm-hmm. a pick and it's not done in a live draft room, this really gives you a chance to adhere to what you had kind of mapped out.
Yeah, I think this is fantastic. First of all, like, I think understanding kind of like where you're going at the necessities of like, these guys are my guys. Like the way I look at certain players is my guys. These are the guys I want to leave out of. And if I got to move up to go get these guys, I'll do that. Like my guy this off season, I'm not joining any leagues that are outside of like charity because my brain physically cannot do it anymore. Like I just don't have the time anymore. But like my guys, definitely like you're thinking CJ Stroud, is there a way that I can maneuver to get CJ Stroud? Is there a guy like Anthony Richardson at the quarterback position where I want to build around those players because I do think I love their upside. Right. And I like that. I like that idea there. I also like the risk reward part of it. Like I like the idea. Like I always go into a player Like, I think some people draft always based on what their possible ceiling can be and never look at their floor possibilities, right? Like, I think that there are some guys like Devonta Chan or Chain, he changes how to pronounce his name all the time, but from Miami, he is the perfect example of that. Like, you know, well, let's ask for you, like, you know, I know in a vacuum, I know you're going to yell at me with context, but like in a vacuum, would he be a player that, I mean, he's definitely a risk reward player. His ADP, I can actually look to see kind of where his, like, where, so I give you a little context. Like, I think he's running back. So he's running back 7 right now. So you're looking at like 4th, 5th round. Like, is that a player where his reward is, oh my God, almost 20 fantasy points per game, where the risk is he's not playing for half the season possibly. What do you do with a player like that?
Yeah, so I guess for me, what it really comes down to, I'm not risk averse. I don't mind taking risks, but I have to be comfortable with the player in order to buy into that risk. Mm-hmm. And he's just, I guess it would really depend on what my roster look, you know, what, how I'm kind of building out. Running back 7, I'm not going to have much built out. Sorry, my cat is going to start to wanting to be the star of the show now. But I personally have not bought in. I think he's dynamic and he's a blast to watch, and I love seeing him, but he's not somebody that I would, that I would be 100% comfortable jumping in at running back 7. Now, if he's on the board at running back 10, 11, and he's fallen, then I'm buying and I'll take it. But if I've got to buy him probably at market cost or higher, knowing that I got to take him at 5 or 6, I'm more than likely going to pass, simply because for all the excitement that I see and the upside that I see, I don't know if the true volume is ever really there. And I think it needs to be multiple perfect storms for him to give you the kind of return on a season that would, you know, put you in a position to reap the rewards from taking him in the top 7.
I think you said it perfectly when you said you have to be willing to buy into the guy, the profile. Like, that's why I had so much Swift. You know, I'm a DeAndre Swift consoyer, right? So, like, I was like, hey, I believe in his profile. I do think he can break out. I was huge in CeeDee Lamb. Do you remember the CeeDee Lamb versus T. Higgins, like, like, just massacre arguments out there? People's families were getting questioned out there. Like, how could you have T. Higgins below CeeDee Lamb? That was happening a couple years ago. But, I mean, obviously, as a Dallas fan, I was extremely biased. But I believed in CeeDee Lamb's profile. So, like, that's why I have, like, if you're looking at my rostership of all my dynasty leagues, I have, like, 80% CeeDee Lamb because of exposure, because I believed in the profile. Like, if you don't – if you question that profile of the risk, you just avoid. To me, it goes to that avoid down below. Like, avoid it, because you're going to get kick yourself if you're not fully bought in there too. And then you also have to realize that a lot of guys probably are going to be in that avoid category. Like, if you're feeling that way as a manager, there's probably a lot of managers that feel the same way. Like, you're always going to be able to sell certain players because the reward, people just buy into those profiles, right? I was going to make a joke, like, people really love, like, Ramondre Stevenson last year. That was a profile that people just bought into. This year, Roschon Johnson seems to be the guy that, like, everybody in the fantasy community loves. Like, they just love those backup running backs. But you might be able to kind of just be able to move him, right? So there is those type of guys and profiles, but I think you did. You hit it on the head. Like, if you believe in the profile, you believe in that, and when you believe in it behind it, and then you expect that reward, you think that he's going to get there. I'm totally okay with that. I do think when you're looking at distractions and avoidance and those type of things, I think one underrated thing that people don't look at is the depth charts coaching part, especially the coaching. One thing at Football Guys we do, Jeff Bell has written it. I know Jason Wood too. He's been there a long time. Every year they write like a off-season piece of all the new coaching changes and how it could affect guys. But one very simple thing to do, just follow Shanahan and McDaniel's coaching tree. And if they're go coach recall plays, just draft those guys. Like, that's a good start. I know there's more context that need to be added there, but, like, you know, that's a good start. But, like, for example, we made the Arthur Smith joke. Are you in on any Steelers players? Or are you just going to avoid that situation
right now? I mean, I obviously things could change over the summer, but right. I mean, Arthur Smith is difficult from the standpoint that he was fairly successful as an offensive coordinator in Tennessee. Is it really the fact that he just couldn't hit? I mean, some guys are just better offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators than they are head coaches. But the combination of Tomlin, of Arthur Smith, that's a defensive focused. I think their spending in the offseason will be primarily on defense. Now, there's a lot of rumors. I think there was an article that came out that lists the Steelers as the top odds-on favorite to get Justin Fields. So if that ends up happening, does that change enough, or does that become all right? I mean, that worries me, because not only do you have a defensive-minded head coach and a defensive-focused franchise, because their success, even in the, you know, when they had Mean Joe Green and Lambert and those guys in the 70s, that was a even with Bradshaw, it was a defensive-focused team. Their identity is defense. It always has been. And so I worry when you've got that focus on one side, and then you've got volatile wide receiver situations with Deontay Johnson and I worry. Yeah. What does that look like, especially with an inaccurate quarterback, potentially Fields, going in there? Is he enough of an established leader to keep that locker room under control? Does Tomlin step in and control the offense? Can Arthur Smith do it? The whole thing is combustible to me. And so from a fantasy standpoint, when you're talking about volume and consistency and production, I would tend to avoid the Steelers as a whole, unless something changes between now and, you know, August.
All right. I'm throwing fun questions at you tonight. Have to figure. And again, it's ever adjusting too with these things, but you should know the coaching staffs that you kind of want to go. And then you also need to know the coaching staffs that like McDaniels and those guys, when we talk about the running back position, they produce high volume running backs. They also don't care about these high volume running backs, and they'll just get rid of them too. So you do need to know, like, you know, there are some scarcity with a lot of these guys overall, like when you're going into it, and just understand the context. Like, context is super important. All right. Any last thoughts on the quadrant before we get to some questions that we have?
No, I mean, obviously I'm on Twitter, so if anybody sees this, has any questions, wants to dive in and talk about it a little bit more, wants more specifics, certainly please reach out to me, you know, just at me, and we can talk through it. I do think it's a valuable tool, and, you know, I think that it definitely can help you as you go through a startup, especially if you don't have a ton of experience with, you know, doing dynasty startup drafts.
And I think one thing I want to do, at some point in my life when I have some time, I want to fill these out a little bit. Like, I want to kind of, I'm going to go and probably throw it on our Patreon or something, or even on Twitter or something, like, hey, you know, these are kind of guys that I would probably stay away from. These are kind of guys, positional runs that I see. And I want to try to add this to some of the content here on the YouTube channel of, like, the mocks that I do of, like, you know, things that we see there. But I think it is extremely important to kind of use, because it just gives you a tool where you're not just winging it as you go through there. All right. I want to get to some questions. I know I saw some, like, three or four questions, and we got to get out of here. But how do you go about correcting roster construction in an existing league? Now, I think we're going to talk about this. We might not. So I just want to get to the question anyway. Are you willing to sell at a discount to fix it? For example, having too much value at tight end. So I think this is a great question, Sean. Like, if you have too much value, are you willing to sell at a discount? I think it depends on, what is your main goal? Like, do you have a goal in mind? Are you just selling to sell because you have too much value at a spot, or do you have a specific reason why you're trying to sell to, like, improve a spot, running back or wide receiver spot or whatever the case may be there? What is your opinion on this?
I think it really depends on what's the range of correction needed in this league. So if you're a few players away, if you feel like you're in the team 5 to 7 range and you're close to teams 2 and 3 with just a few tweaks, I would probably be more hesitant to sell at a discount to fix it. I would, you know, you have a long window between now and September. I would be active and still be aggressive from the standpoint of trying to make trades, but not necessarily sell at a discount. I think if you realize your team 11 or 12 and you really need to make some, you know, wholehearted changes to this roster, I would be more aggressive to sell at a discount and try to bring in as many you know, future assets as you possibly can. But that would be the key to me, is where do I fall in the league hierarchy? What does that look like? And try to make a plan from there.
Okay. No, I think that's exactly how I would kind of talk about it too. Inbox trades. We got some trades here. 10 team super flex start 10. So 10 team, I want to lead assets, super flex start 10. This one has kept me up for two nights. Oh man, we got to get you some sleep out here. So you get some sleep. Give Bryce Young, Josh Jacobs, Deontay Johnson, Kendre Miller, Jonathan Mingo, 107 and a second to get Fields, Njoku, White, and Dell. Well, that's a big boy trade. A lot of assets in this trade here. I mean, Fields is worth the first and the second, you know, if I'm going to try to break this trade down. You know, in 10 team though, I know I just said I don't like a ton of depth, so there is definitely depth on the other side there. I just don't like, there's a lot of question marks with what you're getting. Fields, question mark about where he's going to be playing. Rashad White, you know, can he kind of have that same volume and usage and efficiency? I don't know about that. Dell is fine, but what if they bring in a wide receiver? And then Njoku did not look good with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, and how is that going to be going there? Definitely a ton of risk on that side. Where are you going with this one, Leo?
I just don't see the reason to do it. I mean, it feels like you're trading a you know, B package for a B package is what it feels like. It just, I mean, maybe you've got a particular player that you don't want to have rostership of, like yeah. Deontay, or you're scared about Bryce Young's trajectory. I mean, to me, I would probably, if that's the package you want to move, I think I would look for different assets on the return. Mm-hmm. I think I would hold and try to build a different deal.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think those assets are just there for as many assets you're giving up. And I like Josh Jacobs still for this next 2 years. I think you can get more. If Bryce does anything a little bit better, like, you're going to get that value there. And if you said you wanted to upgrade at QB was the move, I get it, but I don't. Fields is a huge question mark.
Yep.
And like, you could probably get a tier of quarterback in that same year. Like, go try to get Kyler. I'd probably be more comfortable getting Kyler Murray than Justin Fields.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. And in the last couple of questions, and we'll get out of here, who would be a good running back to add with Hall and a chain on a 12 team super flex start 10? There's all kinds of that rear tier. If I was going through it, like, in terms of value wise, like, I still think Josh Jacobs, you know, he's going late seventh, early eighth round value. I think if you're competitive and you want to go get it, Hall Jacobs gives you a pretty safe floor, with a chain being that ceiling play. If any running back that you're looking to add, I would be getting a floor guy, like a floor guy that I think is going to get volume. Imani could be a good pick. Derrick Henry, like, maybe if you want to get really cheap in those ranges, like, yep. Brian Robinson is pretty cheap, probably going to get volume at least this year. That's where I would be looking based on value, but I definitely want a floor guy with a chains kind of ceiling.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Definitely want a floor guy to balance there. And even somebody like, I don't know if Mixon will be back with the Bengals. Yeah. Probably not. Even somebody like that. I think there's going to be movement. And I think you're going to have an opportunity to add a floor guy fairly inexpensively, you know, over the course of the next few months. So that's where I would be focused.
All right. 100%. All right. Let's get into this one. I traded Purdy for the 206 and 211 in one quarterback league. I have Mahomes and Love win the trade. Yeah, I mean, one quarterback, if you already have Mahomes and Love, I don't mind it. I don't know what Purdy's values is in one quarterback, to be honest with you. That seems fair, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, 2-6, 2-11, are you going to get somebody that – I mean, you had to move Purdy, really, because that's your depth asset to move. Yeah. But 2-6, 2-11, yeah, are you going to get – any type of volume productivity coming out of the draft? I think what I would have maybe tried to do, again, depending on what your league's able to do, is I might've tried to move Purdy for maybe a third for a first in 26 and try to get that first. Even if I had to add a little something to Purdy to get that done, I think that might've been a little bit more value. But I mean, in a one quarterback league, I mean, it's really a flip of the coin.
Yeah, it is. It's a flip of the coin there. And then this will be our last one. I'm going back and forth on the better dynasty asset, Josh Jacobs or Tajay Spears. New to the channel. Appreciate you watching. I appreciate that. You know, they're going pretty close in ADP back to back. I will say this. Better value is a tough part of this one. Like, who's the better dynasty asset? I think that Josh Jacobs is a better win now piece for this year, and his value is going to be higher when the season starts and has a couple of good games. Tajay Spears is probably the better dynasty asset right now because, based on perception, he's going to be the volume guy and he's going to have that. So, like, right now to the season, I think Spears is going to have more value. I think he's the better asset in terms of that. I think Josh Jacobs, though, from the season probably to like week eight, if he could have Josh Jacobs games, like I expect him to kind of bounce back, he'll probably be the better asset. So this is a window question for me.
I agree 100%. I do think that if the idea is to potentially, if you have the idea of gaining Spears and flipping him before the season starts, then that's where I would go. If your idea is to build for your own roster and who's going to provide you the most value in this particular small window, then I would lean Jacobs. In a vacuum with everything removed from all of this, I would give a slight edge to Spears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. And that generally just how I look at it when you took it windows. Spears is definitely probably right now in a vacuum the better asset there. So, all right, we did it. We're not getting canceled because we'd cancel ourselves. So we don't cancel ourselves here. So hope you guys enjoyed it. Leo, appreciate you coming on, man, and kind of diving into the roster construction. We will be on a podcast. So if you caught snippets of this, I'm going to try to get the podcast up and loaded tonight. I'll tweet it out. So follow us. At @Sega_FF or @DuBois_22. And we will definitely have discourse. Talk to us, ask us questions. We'll be diving into it. So appreciate you guys. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Until then, make sure you like, subscribe to the channel.